Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, I'm excited to have as my guest a first-time graphic novelist. Now, listeners know how rare I have a guest on with a first book. But this book, my favorite thing is Monsters by Emile Ferris, is a, well, it's a phenomenon. It's quite amazing. It's volume one, 386 pages of a two-volume graphic novel from Fantagraphics, and it's in the form of a girl's notebook, a three-hole punch lined notebook, and so what we're looking at really is not quite a cartoon strip. It's Karen Reyes is her name. Notes that come because she can't bear most of her life. She's in love with monsters and monster comics, and that's because she feels herself to be a monster. And she reads the cartoons, the comic books about herself, monster comics with titles like Ghastly. What are some of the others?
Dread, Spectral, True Terror Tales. Yeah.
And she loves to copy their covers. In particular, she identifies with the Wolfman. Why?
Why does she identify with the Wolfman? Well, the Wolfman is free. The Wolfman is able to, you know, those horrible fashions with bows and tiny buttons and little floral patterns. She's able to just shred those and jump through the window and howl at the moon and find herself in the woods and not be a girl. And not be a 1960s woman eventually, but maybe be a wolf, man, woman.
And she imagines herself looking like a wolf man. We learn that she buys her fangs from those wax candies, if I'm not mistaken, that she puts over her teeth.
Actually, she's based on me. I had very pronounced canines that actually were sanded down by a dentist against my will. I was very proud of them. They were extremely long and animal-like, and it was part of what I liked best about myself. So she has them.
I remember those candies.
I do, too. I loved those, yeah. And they were a part of... They are definitely a... They're definitely a part of what she loves. I remember I can just taste them in my mouth right now.
Yeah.
They made the red lips, and then they made the wolf or vampire teeth. Yeah, they were wonderful.
And this is the story of Karen. She's age around 10, and she's a magnificent drawer. She uses... particularly pencils, pens, and even when she's making homemade valentines. Of course, as a wolf girl, her classmates don't give her valentines, but she and her brother have homemade ones in which they use hard pieces of macaroni.
Right.
And say, I couldn't give you my heart, but I gave you my ventricle.
Right.
And there's the piece of macaroni with some food coloring.
Right, like blood, which, of course, this is a Valentine, and the nuns are not really pleased with this. This is not, in their mind, the spirit of Valentine's Day.
And she thinks she's a wolf woman. She mm-hmm. thinks she looks that way. Very late in the first volume, her brother, Dees, is going to force her to look in the mirror and see that she's not what she thinks she is.
Right.
And it's horrible for her.
Yeah.
Because then she has to figure out what it is she is. And right. one of the things she is that she likes girls.
That's right. And that isn't something that she can see any representation for in her world, except in one movie, Daughter of Dracula. There's a moment when, and it was actually, I found out later, after I, of course, saw it, I found out that that had been the homoeroticism of those moments in the movie had been cut. You see her almost kissing. You see the daughter of Dracula almost kissing this woman who I believe, as I recall, his name is Janet, that she kidnaps. And so there's this moment, this really fraught sexual moment between them that's very beautiful and enticing. And I remember as a kid watching that and thinking, oh, that's it right there.
And in this book, my favorite thing is monsters. It feels as if they're her favorites because they free her. It's not just that they are free and that they can leap from the window or howl into the night. It's that they give her the freedom to explore the unknown world that has no other representation.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And I think that was the case for me and a lot of girls like me and boys as well. Because there was a freedom that even male children knew they didn't have, especially with Vietnam looming and the sense that you were going to be swallowed by your society.
Yes, this book takes place in the late 60s, around mm-hmm. 1967. She draws in secret because she doesn't want her mother to know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she right. doesn't draw because these figures are evil.
No. She doesn't find monsters to be evil, and nor did I. They were my heroes. They were creatures whose lot in life was not their choosing, and yet they conducted themselves with monstrous dignity. They did the things they had to do as monsters. You did not see the wolf man being particularly pleased that he had to go out and savage victims in the forest at night. I'm not sure that gravediggers tasted particularly good, but he had to eat a certain number of them. There was a requirement that, you know, you consume a certain number of gravediggers. But they conducted themselves, like I said, with a certain dignity, and they were also sorrowed by the fact that their lot put them at odds with the society. And yet, they were glorying in it. And I could see that they gloried in it. I loved that about Dracula.
I'm talking to Emile Farris. It's her first book. It's an amazing book. It's a graphic novel called My Favorite Thing is Monsters. I read it in the same way that I read a great novel. It takes place in Chicago.
She's part Appalachian, part Indian, and part...
Irish.
Right.
You see, to other people, her mother might be a nudge or a nag, but her mother is a person of great prescience. Mm-hmm. She knows signs and portents. She is her mother's daughter as much as she might want to think not, because her mother has taught her that the world is full of clues and signs.
Exactly.
And eventually this book is going to turn into a murder mystery.
That's right. And very much when Karen Reyes is watching The Wolfman, the 1941 movie, she sees the gypsy who informs and protects the wolfman. That is her mother.
She identifies her mother as being the gypsy. And the gypsy says beautiful things in the movie. She says that piece of poetry about when the moon is full. And she is, you're right. She is Karen's first teacher about the mysteries of the world.
The great imagination of these illustrations tells us that she's at her notebook most of the time. She can't bear
exactly.
The real world.
That's
she's
so true.
Looking at monster movies,
mm-hmm.
monster cartoon books,
mm-hmm.
and drawing.
Yeah.
When she has nothing to draw, she even draws her hamburgers and French fries, and her mother says, "Eat your food, don't draw it."
Right, right.
We all remember that when
sure.
we discover what our gift is.
It's so true. And so many people now, with the book coming out, Michael, they come to me and they say, "I forgot how much I love to draw, and I think I'm going to start drawing again," which is one of the great gifts of doing the book. Is the exciting people about the personal experience of drawing and how intimate it is, how truthful it is, how almost required it is to survive a world where you get to express very little of yourself. So I think the freedom in the book is that she's expressing as much of herself as she can.
Why does she hide it from her mom?
Because she knows that her mother's not going to accept her being a lesbian. And that's part of the book. And she knows that her mother's worry about her and her love of monsters, it already is a problem.
There's an astonishing condition that leads to the existence of this book at all. You didn't start drawing it until 6 years ago, yes?
That's correct.
And that was because you had become paralyzed and could no longer use your hand. You couldn't hold a pen?
Well, I guess now it is 14 years ago. I was bitten by a mosquito, and within 3 weeks I woke up and I was paralyzed from the waist down. I was the second person in Illinois who had contracted West Nile virus. I had also experienced severe brain damage from meningitis and encephalitis. And one of the negative things, I don't know how many negative things can I list, but one of them was the loss of my right hand. I no longer functioned. It was really strange. I had never not drawn. I had been drawing since I was very little because I was born with severe scoliosis, which is the thing that this West Nile virus compounded. And I had not been able to walk until I was about 2.5 years old. So I was drawing at 6 months. And I had always drawn, and it was my life-saving activity. It was how I experienced joy. And when other kids could run and they could do these kinds of things, I could draw. So to lose that was pretty catastrophic to me.
Suggests to me that your will to overcome the situation, but not just overcome it, to overcome it in the form of a 386-page first volume. And believe me, if you were to look at these pages, these are elaborately drawn, not just in black and white, but in color and in combinations of color and black and white, with layer upon layer of cross-hatching, with faces that intersect so that we make connections between characters we're with and characters we haven't met yet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how did you do it? How did you overcome this?
Well, I began physical therapy. I had a wonderful physical therapist, Naomi Pollack, who believed in me and pushed me and helped me. I had occupational therapy for the use of my right hand, and I entered school. I did probably the most counterintuitive thing. I decided since I could no longer draw, I would go back to school and learn how to digitally animate and write. And that was my course of action to respond to the loss that I had of my fine motor skills. You know what? It is about ferocity. It is about loving something so much that you just do it anyway, and you do it anyway.
It is about ferocity. Now, by the time that you begin, you, Emile Ferris, begin to write about Karen Reyes, you know that you're a lesbian and you are consciously hiding this from Karen, who is retreating behind the world of the monster movie, which in turn becomes the world of monstrosity. She has a neighbor who was the terrified victim of suffering in Nazi Germany, a whole realm, not of the usual story, but of prostitution within
Weimar Berlin. Yeah, and there was so much because the economy had been utterly destroyed. And so many, many people turned to prostitution to support their families. And at the time of, during the 30s, it was considered, well, it was, Berlin was called a whore. I mean, that was how it was referred to in the world because there were so many vices that were catered to as a result of the destroyed economy. So,
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Emile Ferris about what you can already tell is her very intense book, My Favorite Thing is Monsters. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Emile Ferris about her new book, her first book, My Favorite Thing is Monsters. I can't wait to see the second volume. I hear you finished it.
Nope, not quite yet. I'm still working on it.
Oh, I'm dying to see it. A graphic novel that takes us through the mind of a 10-year-old girl as she takes it upon herself to solve her neighbor's mysterious murder. Now, the world presents itself to her as the realm of mystery. Who is her brother's father? Who was her own father? He's disappeared early.
He's the invisible man. Most of the characters, in, as she understands them, are predicated on B-movie monsters. And he is the invisible man. She's never met him, to her knowledge or to her memory. And her brother has eliminated him from the family photographs. He has turned the father into a pair of sunglasses and a hat.
There's an upstairs neighbor who seems secretly to be a member of the mob, and he disappears. There's a downstairs neighbor who's a ventriloquist, and it's almost as if there's a mass killing. His dolls, his ventriloquial dolls, are found in the street, all except his favorite. So we're waiting for the second volume
to find out what happened
to
Mr.
learn.
Chung.
There are so many things that we are waiting to hear, but in the meantime, you see, we're learning so much about Karen. Karen has been taken by her brother, whose nickname is Deez. She loves him. She imitates him. He is apparently the artist in the family.
He's the artist, right? And he's her entree to the world of art.
He takes her to the museum. And at the museum, she draws pictures of the pictures mm-hmm. that she sees.
She can keep them that way. She copies them into her notebook.
And she sees these pictures as having clues to her life. There's one in which mm-hmm. the Virgin Mary is holding what looks like a skull. Mm-hmm. And all of these pictures that she's drawn from the classic collections, Delvaux and others, I suspect are part of yet another story.
So true.
They not only continue in the second book, the use of these pictures, but they are part of other stories. I mean, they inspire me very much. I find them as, they're like sigils or they're very ominous. They're full of arcane wisdom.
Yes, when I was talking to my mentor and director in the field of graphic novels, Art Spiegelman, he said to me, you really can tell when Emile is drawing something that makes her happy and when she's drawing something that she just has to get through.
Oh my gosh, is that obvious? Oh no. Oh my gosh.
Well, that trip...
Oh man, you told on me.
That trip to the art museum mm-hmm. is such a beautiful trip, and also the scenes in these mysterious pharmacies in Nazi Germany. Mm-hmm. We don't quite understand how that works, but they're concealed
the
bordellos.
System was a concealed bordello, exactly. And it was a way by which underage girls could be delivered to men, and they could ask for a particular type of girl. And, you know, by virtue of the pill, the color of the medication they needed would be the hair color, and the dosage would be the age. And, you know, this was actually what was done.
Now, let's make one thing very clear. This book is drawn, not digitally animated.
No, it's all drawn. The whole book is, yeah.
And as I understand it, it's drawn in layers.
Correct.
Tell me about that.
Well, I love oil painting, and there's something that happens with oil painting when you apply glazes over a color. You can change a yellow to a kind of a sickly yellow, or you can change a green to a blue, and they have so much more depth because these other layers exist underneath. Well, I wanted to do that using Bic Pen. And so what I would do is...
I dare you.
Yeah, I know. It's only a matter of absolute lunacy that I wanted to do this, but I decided to try it, and it worked very well. And it requires layers upon layers of colored pen, and not every drawing is a layered, but most of them are. A lot of them are.
Well, especially what runs through the book. I just opened up to the cover of a monster magazine called Horrific,
mm-hmm.
and these are her favorite magazines, and you come, or at least if you're me, you come to understand as you're reading that whenever you come to one of these covers, mm-hmm. another Tales of the Eldritch and the Arcane,
mm-hmm.
that they are places where Karen can no longer stand what's happening to her, so she turns to a monster magazine.
Exactly. She's looking at these magazines to help explain things to herself, because they contain clues that she can understand and contextualize her experience through. So it isn't just, you know, Medusa's head getting severed. It's this whole idea of a woman losing agency in a situation where she's raped. And, she is using this context to understand her life.
Okay. So what would seem to be a kind of whimsy. My favorite thing is monsters. Monsters are the escape from the cruel and cold world in which she's rejected by her friends at school,
mm-hmm.
by the nuns. She's very fortunate. She has a family. Her brother and her mother love her.
Mm-hmm.
They're a very close family.
Mm-hmm.
And now, were you similarly fortunate?
With having a close family?
Uh-huh.
I had a brother I loved very, very much, and I was actually an older sister, and I adored him. I don't think I was similarly fortunate exactly in that way, although I had wonderful parents. I think what I learned about intimacy, I learned an awful lot of it from my friends who were similarly outsiders. I went to school in an area of Chicago where most of us were people of color,
and our teachers were not. So Chicago is a very racially divided city, and my friends were mostly not white, and some were, but many were also Jewish as well. And so their parents, many of them, had either survived the Holocaust or knew about it, or their grandparents had. So there was a context for the book in terms of what it feels like to be an outsider.
Now, I'm very curious. Will my questions be answered in Volume 2?
I think many of them will. I think you'll get some answers to questions you hadn't even asked yet. because, you know, Karen is asking questions that she hasn't actually forward officially through Book 1, but she's answering them in Book 2. And in some ways that she's actually been fighting me about answering. She's a little dismayed with me right now because I'm actually allowing her to say things that she's not sure she wants to.
Wow. Now, this book, My Favorite Thing is Monsters, published by Fantagraphics, has been written about in the New York Times Arts and Leisure section. It's been reviewed on Terry Gross's Fresh Air, in a very nicely
thought review by John Powers.
A book that is so concerned with the life of the outsider, how does it feel to have the book so warmly and immediately welcomed?
Well, it feels very good. I think that I was not the only person. I think I had more friends out there than I ever imagined. People who, like myself, really identified with monsters and loved them. I'm getting a lot of contact with people who are saying, I was that kid too. I understand this world that you wrote about in so many different ways. That's exciting. And I think the times are calling for that. There is an attack right now. We're looking at an attack on the outsider, the person who we're going to marginalize. And I think that the best part of us resists the idea that there is anyone out there that should be marginalized. We won't tolerate it. And I think the book puts that forward, too.
I've been talking with Emil Ferris, author of My Favorite Thing is Monsters, one of the most recent books by Fantagraphics. Thank you for joining me.
Thank you.
You can comment on today's show or see an excerpt from My Favorite Thing is Monsters at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, David Sobel. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms. I am a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when George Saunders is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.